This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
In the news this month, blue stragglers in NGC 188, ocean-like water in Comet Hartley 2, and a 2,000-year-old supernova mystery. For much of human history, stars were assumed to be static points of light which did not change. Now we know they are much less constant, giant nuclear furnaces which evolve over timescales much longer than a single human lifetime. Stars spend most of their lives fusing hydrogen to make helium, and the lifetime of a star depends on its mass. More massive stars have more hydrogen, but they burn hotter and faster, using up their fuel much quicker than their less massive cousins. For a particular stellar cluster made up of stars formed at the same time, we expect to see stars at different stages of evolution depending on their mass. But for older clusters, the most massive stars will have already evolved, becoming red giants or exploding as supernovae, leaving a cluster with no hot blue stars. But many old stellar clusters in the Milky Way do, in fact, contain a small but significant population of hot blue stars, which appear to be much younger than the rest of the cluster. So how did these so-called blue stragglers come to be? There have been many suggestions as to the origin of these apparently young stars, and now a pair of researchers have found evidence which narrows the possibilities. Aaron Geller and Robert Matthew of the University of Madison, Wisconsin, looked at the blue stragglers in an open cluster in the Milky Way and examined the properties of their companion stars. The two most likely formation mechanisms for blue stragglers are the transfer of material from one star to another in a binary or multiple system, or collisions and mergers of stars. Many observations and detailed theoretical models favour formation through stellar collisions, but these new observations provide strong evidence that mass transfer is the dominant mechanism, certainly in this particular case. NGC 188 is an open cluster with an age of around 7 billion years, containing many blue stragglers, including a high percentage with binary companions. The researchers studied these binary systems, looking specifically at the 12 examples with orbital periods of around 1,000 days. They found a surprisingly narrow range of companion masses, with most of the blue stragglers having companions with masses of 0.55 times that of the Sun. The two researchers modelled populations of blue stragglers formed through a number of different processes, including the transfer of mass from both main sequence and white dwarf companion stars, and collisions between stars in binary and triple systems. The predictions which best match the observations from NGC 188 are from models where the blue stragglers are the result of mass transfer from a white dwarf in a binary system. This new study shows that a collisional origin for blue stragglers is far rarer than expected, casting doubt on whether it occurs at all. Although mergers in triple systems are not completely ruled out by the data, the observations suggest that this is a far less likely scenario. Further observations using the Hubble Space Telescope are planned by the researchers, and these should allow them to distinguish clearly between these two formation mechanisms. A large part of the Earth's surface is covered by water, but the composition of the bulk of the rock which makes up our planet suggests that the early Earth would in fact have been a pretty dry place, so where did all the water come from? Now, an international team have found evidence for at least one possible source of terrestrial water. The Earth's composition is similar to that of a class of meteorite known as enstatite chondrites, a type of meteorite thought to have formed in the early solar system. The early Earth would have been so hot that volatile compounds such as water would have evaporated, leaving the Earth's surface as a much drier place than it is today. The fact that we have oceans implies that there must have been an additional source of water sometime after the planet's formation. One possibility is that water and other volatile material could have been delivered by the impact of asteroids and comets, but measurements of the isotopic content of water in comets has so far not matched that seen in the Earth's oceans. Deuterium, also known as heavy hydrogen, is an isotope of the element hydrogen containing an extra neutron in its nucleus. On Earth, the ratio of deuterium to hydrogen is roughly 1 to 6,400, so the source of the Earth's water, whatever that was, should have the same ratio. The ratios of deuterium to hydrogen in the six comets measured so far, all with origins in the Oort cloud, are much higher than the deuterium to hydrogen ratio measured here on the Earth. Now, data taken with the Herschel Space Telescope have shown that at least one comet has a deuterium to hydrogen ratio similar to that in the Earth's oceans. In a paper published in the journal Nature on October the 5th, an international team, led by Paul Hartog at the Max Planck Institute for Solar System Research, shows that Comet Hartley 2 has a deuterium to hydrogen ratio pretty close to that of the Earth's oceans. Unlike the other comets where this ratio has been measured, Hartley 2 is thought to have originated in the Kuiper Belt, much further out in the solar system. This time last year, Hartley 2 passed closer to the Earth than at any time since its discovery, allowing highly detailed observations by both ground and space-based telescopes. Observations made with sensitive instruments on board the Herschel satellite allow the scientists to determine the amount of heavy water present in the comet. Both water and heavy water, water where one of the two hydrogen atoms has been replaced by an atom of deuterium, have characteristic emission patterns in the infrared part of the spectrum. Even though the amount of heavy water contained in the comet is very small, the sensitivity of Herschel's instruments meant that it could be detected and measured. The results show that, for Comet Hartley 2, the ratio is 1 to 6,200, very close to that on the Earth. While Comet Hartley 2 itself was not the source of the Earth's water, this result implies that similar comets formed in the same region of the early solar system could have been. As is so often the case, however, the results also raise further questions. It was thought that the deuterium to hydrogen ratio would vary with position in the solar system, with the ratio becoming larger at greater distances from the Sun. Hartley 2, however, comes from further out than the other six comets for which this ratio has been measured, but has a smaller deuterium to hydrogen ratio. This implies either that this particular comet originated closer to the Sun than was thought, or that the distribution of deuterium in the young solar system was not what we assumed. Either way, while adding weight to the theory that the Earth's water is cometary in origin, these results still leave some unanswered questions about our own solar system. When stars explode as supernovae, they release large amounts of fast-moving material into the interstellar medium. Just as a smoke ring blown into the air soon loses energy and slows down, the spherical shell of material ejected in a supernova explosion eventually loses speed, and the rate of expansion slows. Just how quickly the material slows down depends on the density of the surrounding material in the interstellar medium. So if you know when a particular supernova occurred, and you know how fast the material should have been moving because of the explosion, you can calculate the size which you expect the remnant to be. A long-standing mystery with one particular supernova is that the actual size measured today is some 2 to 3 times larger than expected, based on what we know about supernova explosions, the speed the ejector should be moving, and the estimated density of the interstellar gas in the Milky Way. Now, in a paper published in the Astrophysical Journal, a team led by Brian Williams of North Carolina State University have found evidence why this particular supernova remnant is so much larger than expected. The remnant, known as RCW86, is thought to be the remains of a supernova explosion seen from Earth 2,000 years ago, the first known recorded supernova in human history. Knowing the date of the explosion from records made at the time, astronomers calculated the size of the remnant today, based on the normal density for the interstellar medium and how fast the ejected material appears to be moving. The result is 2 to 3 times smaller than what is actually measured by telescopes today, assuming the remnant is at the measured distance of 8,000 light-years. The speed of particles in the remnant today is too slow to have created a remnant this large in just 2,000 years. The logical conclusion is that the initial supernova occurred in a cavity, a bubble-shaped region of lower-than-average density, allowing the ejector to expand faster than normal until they reached the edge of the bubble and were forced to slow down. Normally, cavities such as this are expected from core collapse supernova, the type of explosion which results from the death of a star with a mass greater than 8 times that of the Sun. Such stars have powerful stellar winds before they explode, and these winds push away the surrounding interstellar medium, effectively blowing a low-density bubble. The team used the Spitzer and WISE infrared satellites to image the entire remnant of RCW86, covering an area on the sky more than 40 arc minutes in diameter, larger than the full moon, and compared these images with data from optical and X-ray detectors. Hydrodynamic models of the system suggest that the most likely scenario which explains the observed properties of the nebula is a supernova explosion into a low-density bubble created by the central object some time before the final explosion. Such a model fits the observed properties of the remnant, but does not distinguish between a core collapse or Type 1a origin. However, the large amount of iron seen in the X-ray observations is a strong indicator that the supernova was far more likely to have been a Type 1a, the kind of event resulting from material falling onto a white dwarf in a binary system. This finding is particularly interesting because these low-density bubbles, such as the one seen in RCW86, were previously only associated with core collapse supernova. And finally, in the second high-profile re-entry in as many months, the ROSAT X-ray Observatory made its fiery descent into the Earth's atmosphere on October the 23rd. Launched on June 1, 1990, its mission ended in 1999, but due to having no onboard propulsion system, a controlled re-entry was not possible. The Röntgen satellite, to give it its full name, was a German spacecraft which made the first all-sky X-ray imaging survey. Originally intended to operate only for 18 months, the mission was highly successful, ultimately operating for a total of 8 years, until the failure of its primary star tracker in 1998. On Sunday, October the 23rd at 01:50 Universal Time, the satellite entered the atmosphere somewhere over the Bay of Bengal. Although it is possible that larger parts of the craft may have survived re-entry, it is not yet known whether any parts of the satellite actually reached the ground.